Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? That was Moses' first response when God indicated to him that he was sending him to be a deliverer for his people. God's reply was it didn't matter who Moses was. What mattered was that God would be with him. To which Moses seems to respond, well, who are you? Who are you that you're sending me to deliver people? And God responded then in indicating who he was. The God of eternity, the God of constant presence and preservation, the God of providence and care. And then he proceeded to underscore the reality of a plan that he has been working on, a plan that he intends to fulfill, a plan that includes Moses' life in the midst of a people. And now Moses responds to that and he says, but they won't believe me. They won't believe me. After all, you know, they've not had the benefit of talking to a burning bush. It's only been witnessed by a flock of sheep. They're not going to back me up very well. The people are not going to believe me. And so the Lord very graciously speaks to Moses and reveals to him his power, a power that he will reveal to his own people, and ultimately a power that he is going to reveal to the Egyptians. Three signs are given to Moses. Now, notice, three signs are given to Moses. Later on, these same things will be described as miracles. Chapter 4 and verse 21. When you go back to Egypt, God says to Moses, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I have put in your power. He's referring to these things that he will just show Moses in a moment, and other things as well. But here he calls them miracles, wonders. Well, certainly they're wonders. What an amazing thing to throw a rod, a stick, a staff down on the ground and for it to turn into a snake. This isn't some kind of conjuring trick. Moses steps away. In fact, he flees from it. He's scared stiff. This staff could do him harm. Now that it's a snake, it's a real snake. What an incredible, wonderful, amazing thing. And to have your hand that is perfectly well turn leprous in a moment and then just as quickly be restored to full health. What a wondrous thing. And then to be told that simply by pouring some water out of the Nile River onto the ground, it's going to turn to blood. What an amazing thing. Certainly, anyone who observes these things will be stunned by them. But the point is that they oughtn't just to be stunned by them. God describes them as signs. If they will not believe you, God said in verse 8, or listen to the first sign, they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs, or listen to your voice, there's a third sign. Signs aren't just to make us amazed. Signs are to point to something. Signs are to direct, to teach, to instruct, to guide, to inform. this is exactly the same word that God used earlier in his conversation with Moses in chapter 3 and verse 12. God said to Moses, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. This will be the proof. This will be the verification that I have sent you. What will happen, what I have instructed you to do, will come about. He's not going to receive the sign on this occasion until after he's performed the action. But nevertheless, it points to something, that God will have been with him all along. Now, what do these signs point to? What instruction do these signs give us? Well, the scriptures themselves do not interpret them for us. And so, to some degree, we're having to rely on reason. Knowing something about the situation in Egypt and the situation of the people of Israel there and the situation of Moses, we can, I think, come to a reasonably reliable interpretation of these signs. In the first sign, Moses' staff becomes a snake. It isn't intended simply to mesmerize the people. As Moses goes back to Egypt and he tells the children of Israel, God appeared to me and he has sent me to deliver you from Egypt. And they say, really? How can we believe you? And Moses presents them with this sign. He casts his staff on the ground. It turns into a snake. Wow! That's amazing! But it's more than amazing to the children of Israel in Egypt. How so? Well, the Egyptian kings, in the crowns that they wore, had cobras either carved into it or as a moulding upon it. The cobra represented one of the gods of Egypt, Re. And Re, alongside Amun, was the most powerful god in Egypt. Indeed, that crown upon the Pharaoh's head pointed also to his divinity. The pharaohs of Egypt, like the later emperors of Rome, were worshipped and obeyed as gods. And here comes Moses amongst the people of Israel in Egypt. He casts his staff on the ground. It turns into a snake. He picks it up and it turns back into a staff. And God is saying, effectively, to these people, I'm in control. Here in Egypt, where the snake god rules, I am in control. One commentator also suggests that these signs are not only for the children of Egypt, but that these signs are also for Moses. After all, he's just been making a string of excuses as to why he should not obey the call of God and go into Egypt to deliver the children of Israel from there. God is telling Egypt he can take something ordinary and make it into something deadly. He can turn a staff into a serpent and he can turn Moses into a formidable opponent for Pharaoh. Who am I, Moses says, to deliver the children of Israel from Egypt? Who am I that I should stand before Pharaoh and call for him to allow the people of Israel to go? Well, God is going to transform Moses into a man to be reckoned with, even in the palace of Pharaoh. In the second sign, Moses' hand becomes instantly leprous. Now, we need to realize that in Egypt, leprosy was widespread. And at the time, it was thought to be completely incurable. You had leprosy, you were an outcast. And here's Moses putting his hand into his cloak under God's instruction, and his hand immediately becomes leprous. Incurable. But God cures it. God afflicted him, and God healed him. And God is able to do this in Egypt. That which the Egyptians are impotent to do, God is able to do. They will be no match for the God of Moses. And of course, it's a lesson for Moses as well. God has transformed Moses' hand, and it's an indication that he can transform Moses' life. Moses feels inadequate. He's not up to the job. In fact, this illustrates perhaps something of the degree of the corruption and inadequacy of Moses to lead the people of God in a way that glorifies God. But God can work. God can change this man. God can renew him and make him a leader among the people of God in a way that brings glory to God. And then we come to the third sign. This time, Moses isn't actually able to perform the sign for his own satisfaction. God has just instructs him what he will do if the children of Israel don't believe the first two signs or the words that Moses utters. You shall take some of the water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water that you shall take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. The Nile was the source of life and of prosperity for Egypt. In its seasonal flows and flooding, it brought fresh soil and nutrients down into the Nile Delta, which became a place of great fertility. And this was the source of life, really, in a very real sense, for the land of Egypt. Without this water, Egypt would die. And God demonstrates that he has the power to destroy Egypt, even as he turns the waters of the Nile into blood. It will become infertile. They will become impoverished and destroyed by God. God is able to conquer. And this too is a message for Moses, as well as for the children of Israel. God is able to conquer by the hand of Moses, who in and of himself is powerful to accomplish anything, but in obedience to God is able to accomplish anything. And so these three signs are given, not simply wonders, not simply amazing things that are supposed to stun people into, I guess, a sense of, well, if you can do this, then I guess you can do anything. But no, that there's a particular message that is being conveyed by these signs. Messages that have particular relevance for a people who are enslaved to Egyptian masters. God is in control. God is able to transform their circumstances. God is able to destroy their enemy and lead them out of that land of bondage. The signs speak about the power of God in very particular ways to a people who need to be convinced of it. This isn't going to be wishful thinking that somehow Moses, by some miracle, is going to be able to convince Pharaoh to let them go. No, the God of Moses, who is with Moses, will accomplish the release of his people definitively. One would have thought that these things would have been enough to convince Moses to go. But Moses hasn't finished yet. He hasn't run out of excuses yet. Moses said, "Oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you've spoken to your servant." He effectively says, "You know, I've seen the burning bush, and that's amazing. And I've heard your plan, and that all sounds pretty good to me. And I've seen these amazing signs, and they are wonderful truths that you are conveying, but nothing's changed in me. I'm still the same person as I was before I started having this conversation with you. I'm not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. Nothing's changed in me. I'm slow of speech and of tongue. How on earth am I going to be able to speak to these people and speak to this king and deliver your people out of his hand?" Moses pleads incompetence. Now, that in and of itself is not a bad thing. Too many people are convinced that they are competent to do God's will and do it in their own strength. It's not a bad thing to feel one's unworthiness, one's inabilities, when faced with the call of God. But Moses is going further than that. Moses is essentially refusing the call of God. The Lord said to him, "Who made the mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? I'm in control," God says. I know who you are. I made you. I know what your abilities are. I gave them to you. I know what handicaps you. I'm in control of that as well. Now, therefore, go. Go. I'll be with your mouth. I'll teach you what to speak. God is the one who provides competence. We could say, God is the one who decides who is competent, because he is the one who is able to overcome our incompetencies. But Moses hasn't finished yet. He said, "Oh my Lord, please send someone else." It's not exactly what the Hebrew says. The Hebrew translation would be more along the lines of, "Send by whose hand you will send." Vague, not quite as definite as our ESV translates it. But nevertheless, it conveys the right idea. At best, Moses' response is a grudging, "Oh well, have it your way. If I have to go, I have to go." The ESV translation expresses where Moses' heart is at. Please send someone else. He doesn't want to go. He's made that abundantly clear in all the excuses that he's made. "Who am I? They won't believe me. I don't have the abilities. Send someone else." And God, we see, if I can use the term, loses patience with Moses. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. So carefully and graciously, God has conversed with Moses, and with each objection, God has shown him that he can overcome those problems that Moses perceives. All the way through, God has shown him his power and his ability to overrule and overcome these things. And none of it seems to have registered with Moses. And the picture in the Hebrew is that of a beast that is snorting in rage. It's very graphic. And here is the anger of the Lord kindled against Moses. Why? I mean, admittedly, Moses would have tested anyone's patience by now with all his excuses. Even despite all the obvious ability of God to overcome the problems, why is God's anger so aroused against Moses? Well, God calls his people to trust. To trust him. Essentially, Moses' problem is not that he's not very fluent. It's not that the people won't believe him. It's not that he's just a shepherd looking after some sheep in the wilderness and not really a leader of people, and certainly not the kind of person that Pharaoh would pay any attention with. Those aren't Moses' problems. Moses' problem is he's not trusting God. God has called him. God has commissioned him. God has given every evidence that he will be with him. God has shown him that he has the power to make his mission successful, and Moses simply refuses to trust God. And yet, even as his anger is kindled against Moses, look at the mercy in the reply that he gives to him. Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know he can speak well. There's that last excuse removed. And at this point, Moses is probably thinking, oh good, he's going to send someone else. He's going to send Aaron. Big brother's coming to the rescue. Behold, God goes on to say, he's coming out to meet you. He'll be happy to see you, and you'll speak to him. You'll put the words in his mouth. I'll be with you and with him. I'll teach you both what to do. But you're going, Moses. You're going. I've called you. This is your job, not Aaron's, and you will go. He shall speak for you to the people. He'll be your mouth. But you shall be as God to him. It is the picture of a God and his prophet. A picture that the children of Israel would have understood. But more specifically, it is a picture that the Egyptians would understand. In fact, God says to Moses almost an identical thing in chapter 7 and verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You'll speak to Aaron, Aaron will speak to Pharaoh, Aaron will speak to the people. You will be like God. You will have the power. Power derived from Yahweh, the Lord God. But nevertheless, in the eyes of Pharaoh, Moses will be this all-powerful one who will smite him and embarrass him and eventually will deliver the children of Israel out of his hand. God is calling Moses to trust him. So he says, take your staff in your hand so that you can do the signs. You're not off the hook. You're going to Egypt. Send someone else. That's what Moses has wanted ever since he first heard God's suggestion that he was going to send Moses to Egypt. Send someone else. I don't want to do it. I don't think I can do it. I don't think the people will want me to do it. Send someone else. What about you? Do you know that God has sent you, if you're a Christian this morning, this evening? God has sent you. Sent you where, you say? Well, he sent you into the world to be his witness. He sent you into the world to represent him in your place of study, in your place of recreation, in your place of work, when you do your shopping, in your home. God has called you to represent him, to speak of him, to make him known. And you may not want to do it. You may not feel equipped to do it. You may say, well, I'm not a great orator. I'm not a fluent speaker. I'm not very wise. I'd get all muddled in my words. And as for my life, well, it's hardly one that represents God. And God says, that may all be true, but I'm in control. And I can transform you and make you into someone to reckon with. Because I am God. Trust me and obey me. This is God's call to us all. Not in the same way as Moses was called. Not for the same mission that Moses was called to. But every one of us is called to make God known to this world. And yet, often, our response is, send someone else. Let someone else talk to my colleague at work. Bring someone else into the lives of the students that I'm studying with. Let someone else speak to my neighbor. Let someone else somehow have an impact on the unbelieving family members in my home. God, send someone else. I can't do it. And God says, trust me. Obey me. I'm with you. I will do it through you. May God help us to trust him and to obey him.